Thank you for listening. This is the Legends Podcast by All Day Vinyl. I'm your host, Scott Duddleson. After you finish this episode, please subscribe, rate, and check us out on Instagram and YouTube at All Day Vinyl. Today, I'm excited to speak with a rock and roll legend. While my guest is best known as a founding member of Guns N' Roses and Velvet Revolver, he's also carved out an incredible career as a solo artist, session musician, best-selling author, and SiriusXM host. Earlier this year, this gentleman released his terrific solo, A Lighthouse, features contributions from Iggy Pop, Slash, and Jerry Cantrell. I'm pleased to introduce to you Duff McKagan.
Hi.
Good to see you. Congrats. Just recently, you released Lighthouse, and even more recently, I think a week or two ago, you put out an expanded edition of it, which speaks to how prolific you've been over the last many years songwriting. So I want to ask you, though, because people who know, you know, they know Duff McKagan, a lot of them think Guns N' Roses, and they think Velvet Revolver. But over these last many years, you've evolved into this, I'll call it a punk rock troubadour. Can you talk about how this new phase in your songwriting has evolved? And then we'll start talking Lighthouse.
Punk rock troubadour, I'll take that, you know.
Well, you're speaking truths in the same way that a Woody Guthrie might be speaking. You know, it's not about necessarily if it's punk in the background, it's the truth you're
yeah. Like, yeah, I agree. I mean, I'm going to agree with you only because I came up in the punk rock times, in the like OG late 70s punk rock time. That's how I learned how to write songs, how to play guitar, how to be on stage, how to interact with other people, literally how to become a good bandmate, how to become a good husband, father. I'll go down the line, you know, but it's all inspired through punk rock. And all that means is I learned early on, it was really about like truth telling and a couple chords, and it wasn't fancy playing, and fancy players are great. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I love Stevie Ray Vaughan and Jimi Hendrix, and, you know, I grew up to all kinds of great Stevie Wonder and you know, Sly and the Family Stone. But all of a sudden, it all got pared down to this thing when I was like 13, like these three chords and somebody spouting some truth or another. And it was more street level. It was more something I could understand. It was younger, I suppose. And so I've carried that kind of forward. It's how I think. It's how I still write songs. It's how I interact with people, all of that stuff. And sometime in like 2014, you know, I was doing Loaded and I was doing other things, you know, kind of loud rock.
Yeah.
And which is great. I love doing loud rock. I'm in a big loud rock band and we play the gamut of, you know, big rock. I mean, we're Guns N' Roses is where it's at, you know? So I've been able to, I was saying 2014, with my acoustic guitar, actually listening to what that information, when I put it on my lap and it rests up against my chest, kind of listen to that information that's resonating right there. It's right in front of you. It resonates through your body. Don't ignore that. It's trying to tell you where to sing. It's trying to tell you, you know, and you start, for me, I started to sing quieter and not screaming and not trying to get an octave higher on this chorus. And all these things, these little songwriting tips came to me through my acoustic guitar. If I only just listened, and the lyric writing is an extension of my other writings, my column writing, my book writing, and reading really good authors. I've always, you know, since the punk rock days and all the touring I've done, even when I was drinking and getting, you know, fucked up, I was always an observationalist since I was a little kid. You know, and going out on the road, and I read a lot of history. I read a lot about places that I go to on purpose because I'm interested in it. It's really interesting to me. So kind of being a fly on the wall, taking off to other little cities that are not necessarily where you're playing at, and just kind of living, experiencing other cultures and other people and other parts of the United States and all of that. And I've done that for years. And some of my songs tend to be a discussion of that, you know, what I've seen, what I think people are feeling. I I include myself in those feelings sometimes, but it's not in your face. It's not, there's not a lot of I lyrics in my lyrics, yep. You know, not a lot of me, not a lot of I. It's a lot of we, mm-hmm. or them, the fucking man, you know? And that's, yeah, so that's where I'm at. This is where I've got myself to. And during the COVID thing, I was planning on making a record. I just got my own studio. I'd started recording and Guns was rehearsing to go out on tour. And then I was going to record when we got back from that tour, try to record here and there in Seattle. And suddenly COVID hit and I was able to finish the songs that I had started recording and I had a bunch more. So let's just keep, and as I was recording, you know, it's kind of like the creativity begets more creativity. And I just kept writing songs. And I have a bunch of songs recorded. The Lighthouse is the first record. I had put out an EP last May just for Mental Health Awareness Month. There were three, I thought they were really good songs. So I'm like, we can't just put it out as an EP. I don't know if anybody knows it came out, you know, except for like diehard fans. So we put those songs on this expanded Lighthouse Digital. We recorded a live show in December at Easy Street Records. I have another studio song I did with Jesse Dayton that we added into this group. I have a lot of songs and got to get them out.
You said something earlier in your songs, you try not to use the me or the I, but in what is probably the beacon of the Lighthouse record is the song Lighthouse. And in that, the lyrics are, won't you be my lighthouse, give me sight and lead me home. Tell me why that about that song and how that's such a personal song and the guiding light for the rest of the record.
Right. Well, right. So again, we're going to go back to, you know, suddenly we're all home. And when I'm home, I'm with my wife, Susan, and we're empty nesting now. The girls are grown, you know, and we've been having a really good time. You know, I think probably every couple gets that point like, uh-oh, we're going to have stuff in common. And Susan and I have so much in common. And we, a lot of stuff we weren't able to do because we had kids and we're doing it all. And I really appreciate her. And I appreciate what her and I have gone through to get to this point. You know, you name it, we've gone through it and together. You know, and there's been mostly highs, but there, of course there's lows and there's in-betweens. And we both realize that we got each other's back, like our best interests. I have her best interests. She has my best interests. So when she suggests something, for instance, I'll be like, okay, she's thought of me before she even suggested that, which is radical. You know, it's a radical place to be. And so during the lockdown, when I'm recording it, I'm coming home and she'd make dinner for me. It's just awesome, man. And I mean, it's not awesome. There's a pandemic, you know, but I haven't had time off like that for a million years. You know, I don't know if any of us have, but I realized how much I just loved her, so into her. And it was almost impossible not to write love songs about her during this period. I mean, I wrote like 60 songs. You're going to have some love songs in there. And mine are these truths. And I try, you know, I dressed it up in a thing about the ocean and the lighthouse and the beacon. And, you know, she could also be hope, you know, somebody else could think of that song as like a beacon of hope. I'm rowing hard to get there. You know, doesn't matter what it takes, I'm going to get there. And so that's when the me and the I, and it seemed appropriate. I couldn't say we and them and this. And so I'm grateful for her to give me that place of peace and love to be able to write a song like that. You know, it's a true song. You know, it's a simple three chord song. Totally. You know.
You know, all the songs, they exude authenticity. Like it's coming from a source that feels real. I know it's real, knowing you, and it is. And I'm curious just about the process. You worked, and I hope I don't mispronounce his name, Martin Fevrier.
Fevrier, yeah, that's right.
Who you've worked with over the years with Loaded. and who works with Mark Lanegan in the past. We'll talk about him. And the new record, you work with Jamie Douglas and Aubrey Richmond from the Shooter Band. So it's a bit about, you know, the players and the threads from your past and how that is working with them now in this new context.
Right. So the threads, again, I don't mean to talk about COVID as a time. Like, I mean, I still record this way. Like, I'm going up to record in like a week. I have 13 or 14 songs. I'm bringing Jamie up.
Amazing.
Because he's just like a drummer that I get along with so well musically. He gets my songs. And so we'll record those and just get drums. And then from that point, you know, I put acoustic guitars, I put bass on, I'll sing a vocal, you know, I have lyrics written already for these songs. So I have melodies and lyrics, and then I'll start figuring out what instrumentation and if there's drums missing, I did on Lighthouse, there's songs where I'll play a verse on drums and Jamie's playing the chorus, you know, where I feel wasn't quite right. And I've gotten my drum chops back to a certain extent where I'm playing a lot and I enjoy it. And I can play to a click track and it's cool, you know. I'm not the drummer that Jamie is, don't get me wrong, but I can play a verse. I can do stuff. So we'll have the drums and I'll just start to figure out what else to add. In the case of Lighthouse, we got Aubrey to record backing vocals. She has luckily for us, she has like a garage studio where she can do, she gets work doing this, doing backing vocals, playing fiddle and stuff. And so she did that. I have a guitar player in Seattle, Tim DiGiulio, who's just become this like, he's part of my sound now, Tim. And he's this really cool Mick Ronson-ish type of faces guitar player that, like, Seattle's favorite guitar player, Mike McCready's favorite guitar player is Tim DiGiulio, you know, and he's been playing on all my stuff. So we get him to come in and we'll have like, you know, well, three or four songs for him a day to do. The songs are done. Okay, Tim, you know, here's the song. Be amazing. Make your part stand the test of time and, you know, make it iconic. But we got 5 minutes. Can you do it now? And that's our kind of running joke because we throw so many songs at this guy. And then, you know, I mean, like once in a while, I'll get like a buddy, like Jerry Cantrell, Heard, I Just Don't Know. And it's like, hey, man, you want me to put a guitar on there? You want me to sing? You want me to do something? Like, I love that. And it's so natural. You know, and, you know, I kind of cringe when a record comes out and like, featuring Jerry Cantrell, because it's really not, it wasn't like I was getting a featuring guy. It's just my buddy. And same goes with Slash and Abe Laborio. We did that track back in 96, yeah, you know?
I want to ask you about that. That was from an album that didn't come out. It was a Beautiful Disease.
Right.
Yeah. How did you end up getting that on there? And is that going to see the light of day, that album?
Well, I think piecemeal it will. You know how the record companies can be, the majors and I had a record that was set to come out. I did all the press for it. All the artwork was done. They were pressing it. Right. It was coming out like the following Tuesday, and on a Friday, I think it was a Monday or something, whatever it was, Geffen got bought by mega company, the Omni Group. Let's just call them the Omni Group. And they bought a bunch of labels. And there's a bunch of artists like me, like, I mean, I had a tour planned. There was end caps up at the record stores, you know, like it was the Seattle Times or the LA Times piece had just come out, you know, on the record. And what do you mean it's not coming out, you know? So, and not only that, they kept my masters. And this is after, you know, all the guns were like, hey, we sold a lot of records for you. You should probably just give me my masters back. You know, what are you going to do with them? Nothing. And that took me until Brian Klein, my manager, to 2020 to get them back. This was 1997. So it took 23 years to get them back. So we got these masters. I'd kind of forgotten about it, but Brian was really fighting to get these masters. And we got the songs, and it's like, oh yeah, Abel Boyle's playing drums and all this. He plays drums for Paul McCartney, you know. Again, my buddy, Abel Boyle. Slash came and played on this track. And really it was more the lyric, Hope, of the lyric of the song Hope that they played on, mm-hmm. that I thought would fit this record lyrically, make it part of the arc of the story of the record. So like, okay, let's see if we can put Hope on this record. And I think I re-sang the vocal just so the vocal sounded the same all the way through, but everything else is as it was recorded in 1996, which goes to show you, I don't really use new technology or, you know, whatever. If I use some synth, it's going to be like a 70s synth sounding thing. But it seemed to fit right on there. And Slash just played one hell of a cool guitar. You know, that guy's so inventive and so cool. And then the Iggy thing at the end of this record was I did some shows with Iggy and played on his record, you know, wrote some songs.
The ending is the best.
So he did those from his house in Miami. So we got like three different cadences of the same thing. Here I'm in my studio in Seattle with Martin, and we get to, oh my God, what did he send us? And it's just this booming voice. And it's just Martin and I went, it's the voice of God, it's Iggy, you know? So we were really, the music we put around that, it is Lighthouse, it is the song Lighthouse, but we treated it completely differently. And it was really super special to have that. For me, especially if you know me well, that's like the biggest thing that can happen.
Iggy has written some unreal songs in his lifetime. And with you now playing those songs, did that give you a different perspective on how he writes and how that might influence your writing?
You're right. When you play with somebody, it might be songs that are part of you. But when you want to learn those songs as good as or better than they are in the records, you start to listen to them critically.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize that part went 9 times, not 8, not 10, went 9 times, but there's a reason. You know, you start picking those things up. And he's a master at taking a single riff, you know, the Passenger is one riff through the whole thing and writing, you know, verses and choruses around that and still moves so many. I'm afraid if I were to do something like that, it wouldn't be the movement. He's got such a character in his voice and power. And he can sing la, 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 and keep you like, that's the best chorus I've ever heard. Yeah. You know, if I did that, Duff ran out of lyrics. I'm afraid that might happen. Yeah. So there's just it's delivery. But I sure do learn a lot when I play other people's songs for real. Yeah.
One of the dedications on your record is to Mark Lanegan, who I know you've had a long relationship with and played on one of his early records. Maybe you could talk a little about him and how that might have inspired the record or just about the dedication.
He's a good buddy. So and then when he passed, you know, of course, that happened sometime, I think, during making the record. You know, I think of my friends often, alive or dead, friends and family, you know. And Mark, because I want his memory I want the memory of him to continue going on and off. Because those of you listening now who don't understand the depth of Mark Lanegan's catalog, and whether that's Mark Lanegan solo, Screaming Trees, Gutter Twins, you know, Twilight Singers stuff. That stuff is like the missing link. And when I played on a record called Field Songs, and that was like in whenever that was, 97. 98. I don't know when it came out. I think I played on it like in 97, 98, maybe. I don't know. Yeah. But his first two solo records, that's when I kind of got into it. And I'm like, this guy with just an acoustic guitar in his, nobody's got his voice, you know. There's few people. There's Iggy and there's Mark. There's some people that have that voice. It's like Jesus, they can carry. But his thought to lyrics writing, and the chord choices, and the restraint in his arrangements and instrumentation was something I always, I'm going to do that. I'm going to work my way to that somehow. I want to do that. That feels natural to me. And you can make that, to me, it's very punk rock. The more restrained it is, the more punk it is, you know?
Yeah.
Don't do the obvious.
Right.
And so I learned a lot from, and just no lyric was good enough for him, you know, and he's got brilliant lyrics. So I got some benchmarks. He's one of them lyrically. Cormac McCarthy, the author, is another benchmark. You know, I have these benchmark things, acoustic guitar sounds and drum sounds. I have ELO drum sound is what I always want to go for. I never get it, you know, but so it's good to, I think, have benchmarks in if you're probably anything, but as far as I'm concerned, songwriting and recording.
Are you?
I have things I aspire to.
You said, you know, no lyric or nothing was good enough for Mark. Are you, or how are you with your lyric? Are you going back and revising, or are you?
Oh, I revise. Oh my God.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So I'll write a lyric. I'll get a thing and I'll write that lyric. I have a song that it's too, right? Mm-hmm. I will write poetry. I do some free writing, as you know, lyric writing or whatever you want to call that. Just writing ideas. Sometimes I pull for that. I have it on my computer. Just all this if you read it, it looked like nonsense. You know, to me, there's one piece and that led to that piece. But I'll write a lyric to a song, and then I'll come back to it. Just right as I'm starting to get ready to sing it. I'm like, nah, those words, no. Chop, what are you, you know, I'll beat myself up. That is the worst line ever. You just did that so it'd rhyme with this other line. And so I'll hack it down. And I keep hacking it until I'm at least comfortable singing. I got to be comfortable singing it. It's got to be, you know, you have to have your intention in there. And as you said earlier, I think when we began this, you have to have an idea and get that idea across. And you have to do that in the matter of like 24 to 32 lines, something like that. I don't know what it is. Who counts? But, you know, so you want to get a whole almost book idea through in this one song.
Right.
You have to paint a picture. You have to resolve it or leave it there in a place where somebody else can resolve it. You know, there's a lot to it. So I really think a lot. I'm always thinking of lyrics of when I'm walking my dog, when I'm, you know, just don't know lyric that with Ether's Everglow and all that stuff came to me as I was walking my dog at night. Speaking of a dog, you can hear one. But I, you know, I'll leave a voice note for my wife. She knows when she sees a voice note that's not me. I'll text her, you know. So that's the lyric.
That's a rough
one. Or some melody, you know. I fight myself on it. You know, I don't know if I'm always 100% behind a lyric. There's sometimes I'll get my point across and I'm satisfied with it.
Well, there was an article a couple years ago that I read. It was Wall Street Journal. It was Bob Dylan being interviewed. And Bob Dylan obviously doesn't do a lot of interviews. And he mentioned in that one of the songs that's really made an impact on him was Chip Away from the Tenderness album you did with Shooter Jennings. When I read that, I was so happy. I thought that was the coolest thing ever. And I got to imagine that was, you know, an incredible compliment. And I'm curious, not only about that, but who are some of the lyricists that are inspiring you at the moment or with some of the music that you're doing?
You know, I don't know if it's always lyricists or if it's a story I read, you know, or if it's a writer I mean, you can always hear something in a Clash lyric, you know, that'll be like, oh, yeah, you know, that's okay. I want to do something like that. I never try to copy anything. That's the thing. I won't listen to anything too hard because I don't want to come off as like trying to copy it. I read this book about 5 points in New York you know, the Lower East Side.
That's what the Gangs in New York was based
on. Yeah. In Five Points was his neighborhood. Yeah. The Gangs in New York movie was in Five Points.
Right.
But I was reading about, you know, the immigrants that came from different counties in Ireland. They really went down into like the very particulars of this. And I got so interested in that I wrote about, I wrote a lyric about these people from Lansdowne. It's a county, but it's kind of poetic, Lansdowne. And they came to America, you know, trying to find that thing. They were starving. The potato famine had hit and all of this. And these ideas like this will get a lyric out. You know, I'll write a story and then try to make it rhyme, you know, try to make it poetic and try to get the point across. I read a World War One book. I wrote a song called Trenches after reading this book, you know. So it's probably influenced by the story, and maybe if it's a good author, influenced by their writing style a little bit.
Love it. And then,
hey, buddy. Sorry about my dog barking. No, he's barking at absolutely nothing.
He could join. All good.
He barks at nothing. We have a new dog. He's a puppy. He barks at nothing. There's a song right there.
Yeah, he barks at nothing.
Yeah. We know. It's all over the news, people barking at nothing, isn't it?
That's right. I love what you've been doing with Andrew Watt and Chad Smith with the various, you've been called the New Wrecking Crew. As somebody who loves just old 70s music and 60s music, you know, that term just endears my heart. And you've been a session musician. You've been doing sessions for, you know, 30 plus years. Let me ask you about working with these two dudes and what that is like co-writing and what that is like, specifically also on that Ozzy project that you did.
Yeah.
Which is very cool.
You know, you can get into a room with a guy or a couple guys or a gal, whatever. And if you're a songwriter, everybody's probably experienced this. If you've collaborated, it doesn't work. You can get in a room and that silence is awful. You know, you both got a guitar on and like, uh-oh, got nothing. With Andrew and Chad, sure. When I went over there the first day, I'm like, this could be a big nothing. But you go in there, of course, I don't think like that. I think I'm bringing a ton to the table. Yeah. And Chad is the same way. He's like, and Andrew Watt is amazing. And the three of us together really, really works. Like somebody will have a riff or three, you know, and we'll start the riff. Chad will get up from his drums, get the acoustic guitar, and go, I think we should go here. Amazing, Chad. That's exactly where we should go. And Andrew Watts, just an amazing all around, you know, singer. He's great guitar player, amazing guitar player. He plays keys, he does everything. So Andrew's like 32 now, you know. So it's that younger energy, you know. Not that me and Chad have old energy, because we don't, but it's nice having a kid who's 30, you know, in there. But whatever it is, the three of us work. And we can write Ozzy songs and record them that same day, and we're done. And we can do it with Iggy songs and probably anything, you know, whatever's next, we'll do that too.
Is there anything that you guys are working on at the moment?
Not at the moment. Andrew's doing a Lady Gaga record, and that's really taking up his time. Yeah, he loves it.
That's an incredible project, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And when you're writing your songs, are you thinking ever, is this good for Andrew and Chad? Is this good for Guns N' Roses? Is this good for some other project?
There'll be times when it's like, yeah, and I'll mark it on my, you know, I just record everything in GarageBand through the microphone on my iPad. I've done that for years, you know. And I'll sometimes mark something, you know, GNR or whatever. And that helps. That also helps me categorize, because I have a lot of stuff. I took a vacation, which is a concept.
Yeah,
I took a vacation and we went to Maui, and I was like, I'm gonna go through all my demos. I didn't get through all of them, but I got through a bunch of them, and like picked out what was good. And you know, they're all there for a reason. And I got to remember that. Like, don't just get rid of something because I thought it was something good at the time and not good enough to record it. So let's figure out what that is.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But yeah, so I write stuff for Andrew and Chet. It's got to be for, you know, because we do it for another artist.
Yeah.
So the Aussie stuff, we're like, okay, let's go Black Sabbath mixed with Black Flag, you know? So it's the aggressiveness of Black Flag and put it into like some, what we think is like a Black Sabbath riff, our own version, you know?
I like the songs you guys did on the Ozzy record. Those are great.
Cool.
And then one last question. Hey, I mentioned on my Instagram, like interviewing Duff, I got a number of questions about the Neurotic Outsiders.
Ah.
There was ranging from, is that going to be repressed on vinyl? Which I don't know if you know or not. To, you know, is there, you know, are you guys going to play again? Have you seen these guys? I mean, I know from where I'm at, I've seen you jam with Steve Jones. I've seen you jam with Matt Sorum. I've seen you jam with Billy Idol. So, you know, you're all in an orbit. So the question what's the status of that? If there's,
well, you know, so Steve, the reason that band ended, if you will, we were just, you know, it wasn't, that band was one of the funnest things I've ever done. Yeah. And playing with Steve Jones, he's one of the heroes.
Yeah.
And I got to play guitar with the guy that I learned to play guitar from, you know, him and Johnny Thunders. It's all, those are the licks I play. I learned it, you know, so here I am playing guitar, not bass. I'm playing guitar. He's going to spot me out. Like all my riffs are his riffs, but it was so fun. And the Pistols reunion came up and like, we knew that like, go do the Pistols.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
You know, like we will do everything we can do to help that along. So that's what happened. They did a few years. And I think after that, it's hard to get Steve to, you know, he did some great gigs and I'm glad he did it. Cause me and everybody that's around him, they love him. Like we're trying to like, Steve, you're too genius. You know, you got to get out there and show. He does stuff on Instagram and all that, but it's like, man, you are the pontiff. You're the greatest, you know? So he did some gigs this summer and they did some gigs with us, GNR. And Billy Idol, Paul Cook, and Tony James.
That's amazing.
You know, Generation Sex.
Yes.
So he got out and he started playing gigs and it was, you know, he's the very best. And so maybe he's going to do some more stuff. I don't think Neurotic Outsiders ever, you know, never say never to anything. I'd love to do it, but you know, Steve's got some things up his sleeve that he wants to do, and I back whatever that is.
Absolutely. Well, that was a great time and place and great, great music. And
it was, you know, sometimes it's okay to just leave a band where it was.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have to play again. Yeah.
Absolutely. And it's just another great, great mark and a great career you've had and amazing. So, Duff, thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for all the great music, all the new great music.
And thanks, Scott.
I look forward to whatever you got coming up next. Thank you for listening to the Legends Podcast by All Day Vinyl. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate it, share it, subscribe, and follow us and check us out at All Day Vinyl on Instagram and YouTube.